Welcome to the Informed Pregnancy Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Elliot Berlin, and with me today, Claire Holt. Welcome back.
Thank you for having me.
Man, last time we saw you, you were like...
I was big.
Yeah.
I was ready to go.
And so let's talk about it. Today we're going to do like birth story and motherhood.
Mm-hmm.
So how was the end of your pregnancy?
I was tremendously uncomfortable at the end. I had a lot of...
I could tell by the way you said tremendously.
I don't even think that does it justice. I had really bad pelvic pain and I just felt like I would topple over at any moment. And I was just so ready for the pregnancy to be over.
Pelvic pain in the front or back of your pelvis?
It kind of like all around, mostly in the front, but it was really bad. And I had such trouble sleeping, you know, getting out of bed at night, doing anything other than like moving my hips in a certain direction.
Just totally lined up.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And it was awful. I would wake up 100 times at night. I had really bad insomnia, really bad anxiety, actually. At the end of my pregnancy, and I know a lot of people have told me since, you know, that's because there's a big change coming in the body, everything's happening, there's lots of blood pumping, but I would wake up really panicked a lot at night and not be able to sleep. It was a struggle for me, for sure.
Was there specific things on your mind during those anxious moments?
Or? I don't know if it was, I mean, we've talked a lot before about how I'm not great at not being in control.
And oh, right. I remember that. Oh.
And I think part of it was because I had no idea when the baby was coming, how he was coming, what was going to happen, how I was going to manage it, how my life was going to change. I think all of that sort of started to bubble to the surface.
Yeah, I guess if you have a crystal ball, it makes it easier.
Right, exactly.
There's so much unknown.
So much. And so I would wake up like 11, 12 at night and go downstairs and watch Netflix comedy specials.
Oh, yeah, there's so many great ones.
Mm-hmm. There were great ones.
Oh, my God. I was doing the same thing.
At the end of your pregnancy?
Well, at the end of your pregnancy.
Oh, that's true. There was some good ones, actually. So that really helped me.
Who's your favorite?
I loved the Amy Schumer one because it was very appropriate for how I was feeling at the time.
Yeah, very relatable for you at the moment. I loved it too, and I'm not even...
Yeah, she's great. She's just so open and honest about the experience. And
Jess has a really cool style of pushing a joke till you think it's pushed as far as it can go. And then you think she's
going
to move on to the next
Keeps
one.
Keeps
going. And then bam, she's like not even just getting started.
I know, it was amazing. I loved it. So I did that a lot, and I walked miles and miles and miles because I thought that that would help the baby to come out. And it just gave me contractions the whole time I was walking, and then they would stop when I got home. So.
Did walking make your pelvic pain feel better or worse?
Once I was like a mile into my walk, it would settle and I would feel okay. By the end of the day, I wouldn't be able to move.
Mm-hmm.
But when I was walking and the blood was flowing, I was moving, I kind of...
Once things warm up.
Yeah, I felt good. But it certainly like didn't feel great. And the contractions every time I was like, please be it, please be it, please be it. No, it wasn't it.
So,
yes.
How far along did you get?
So, I was induced at 39 weeks.
Okay.
My doctor shared with me probably when I was 36 weeks that she was going away it might have been a little early actually. Maybe she told me around 32 weeks that she was going to Guatemala to do, you know, a medical mission. And so that, first of all, made me very nervous because I was very attached to her and I wanted her to deliver my baby. And then I had what they told me was a very large baby and was on track for sort of 10 pounds if I went to term. And also there were some things that they picked up in a scan, a growth scan towards the end of my pregnancy that they couldn't really see when he was in utero. So they couldn't measure some things in his heart when he was in there. And so they needed to do an echo when he was born.
Okay.
And so that made me very, very, very nervous.
On top of everything.
I just wanted him out so that I knew that he was safe or so that they could take care of him if there was something wrong. So all of those things combined made me decide to be induced at 39 weeks. My husband and I made the decision together to be induced at 39 weeks.
Other than walking forever, were there other things you tried to
do? Everything. I tried bouncing on the ball. I tried, I'm trying to think of what they are now. I went to the foot spa every day.
Uh-huh.
I was like, just press on all the points. Do it. You know, now in my next pregnancy, I'm going to have foot massages the whole time.
Your pregnancy.
Because it didn't do anything. Absolutely nothing. I had a lot of acupuncture. So I tried sex. That didn't work. All of the things. that they tell you to try to get the baby out, I tried. And
when you were 39 weeks...
I did have my membrane strip, though, actually, on the day of that I was 39 weeks.
Oh, that was the beginning of it all?
Yes.
Okay. Were you effaced and dilated?
I was not very effaced, and I was a centimeter dilated.
Okay.
So I was still quite hard. Is that what they call it when you're not that effaced? Soft and hard?
Or not ripened yet?
Not ripened. I'm not really sure the terminology.
Firm?
Firm, yes. Mm. And, yeah, only a centimeter. So, or maybe a centimeter and a half, actually. So my OB suggested that morning that she stripped my membranes, and that definitely started the process for me. I started to feel like mild little twinges here and there, but mostly I felt nauseous and I had some back pain. And then I lost my mucus plug that night before I went in for the induction.
So irresponsible.
I know. So I feel like it got the process started, and maybe if I'd have let myself labor at home, or if I hadn't gone in or whatever, I probably in the next day or so would have gone into labor. But I was desperate to have my doctor deliver. So.
I got a text just literally right now that a client who is on call for her birth got her membrane swept, but she's second baby and she's already 4 centimeters.
What?
So let's talk quickly.
Already 4 centimeters because you have to go. Okay.
No. It's her second baby. She's not in labor yet. She's just already 4 centimeters going into it.
Oh, like so that'll go quick.
She's like 10 days post-due.
Right.
So when it goes, it's going to go fast.
Lucky for her.
Yeah. But anyway, but on your first, you know, it takes longer. So
it did. The process sort of started. I started to get uncomfortable, I would say, maybe 6 or 7 p.m. at night. And my dog, funnily enough, was following me everywhere.
They know.
He knew for sure. I went into a bathroom that I don't know why I went into some weird bathroom to have a shower, but he followed me in there and he wouldn't leave my side. And that's when I was like, oh, I guess this is probably starting earlier and maybe it'll be a very fast labor for me, which would be ideal. Or maybe I don't even have to be induced and do all of the things that come with induction. Mm-hmm. But
that's not what happened.
That's not what happened.
Mm-hmm. What time of day were you scheduled to go?
So I went in at midnight.
Okay.
Obviously didn't sleep a wink.
Yeah.
I was just so excited. I was so ready to have this baby. And I got there, actually, funnily enough, we got there at like 11:40 or something, and they made us sit in the waiting room because they were like, if we check you in now, it's another day on your insurance, blah, blah, blah.
So, weird.
So we just sat out there like twiddling our thumbs until the clock struck midnight. And then they let us in and, you know, I was just so excited. I remember putting my robe on. You've got the nice big room.
Wait, did you bring your own or did you use
theirs? No, I used the hospital robe.
You used the hospital gown?
Yeah, I don't know why. Oh. I had everything but a robe, by the way. I didn't use half of the stuff. No.
Oh, yeah.
I'd say 90% of the stuff that I brought with me I didn't use.
What was something that you packed in your bag that was helpful?
Shower slippers.
Mm.
I used those with little slides for the shower.
That's something a lot of people don't bring, but probably.
Yeah, I took a shower and I was glad
bring
I had
now
them.
That they're
yes,
listening to you.
I was glad I had them. Yeah. I'm sure there's a few other things. I didn't need the 4 different outfits I bought for
you
him.
You didn't need 4? Oh,
no,
for him?
Probably, for him. I mean, I bought a couple for me too, but I needed I didn't know how big he was going to be, what his color was going to be.
Oh, my goodness.
Would red look good on him?
I know, the first pictures.
Yeah. So sadly, the first pictures are not that cute, and we're all kind of like asleep and blinking.
Typical, I would think.
Yeah. But so we went in at midnight, and when I got there, they checked me, and they said that he was sunny side up. They did an ultrasound, so he that would, I guess, explain why I started to feel sort of contractions in my back.
Yeah, so his spine against your spine, basically.
Right.
So bone against bone.
Bone against bone.
Sounds comfortable.
Yeah, well, I thought it was uncomfortable until I actually started progressing. Then I realized what discomfort really was.
Ah.
But, yeah, so...
What was their initial induction method for you?
So they used Cervidil at first, which is like the pill that they insert. And it basically was because I wasn't effaced. Down.
Okay, yeah.
In the mouth or the... Yeah. No, okay, they insert vaginally. And... it basically gave me like mild period cramps, what I thought were contractions. So, you know, I didn't really sleep because I thought it was going to go very quickly.
Yeah.
And I was excited. But, you know, for maybe I would say from midnight until 5 was what they left They left the Cervidil and they came back at 5 a.m. to check me. And my hubby had a great sleep on the little couch. I was lying. Well, I probably, you know, dozed off for an hour or something, but
Netflix comedy special?
No Netflix. Nothing? I don't know what. I was feeling so overwhelmed and excited and I couldn't sleep. And
no doula at that point?
No doula at that point because my lovely dear doula had a monster 8-hour birth right before mine. So she finished that birth probably, I'd say, 4 or 5 a.m. And I was already in the hospital being induced. And I said to her, look, go and rest. Like, I would feel terrible if you had to do 2 48-hour births because at that point I didn't know how long it was going to take me.
I mean, did nobody tell you that you're probably just going to sit on Cervidil for 6-10 hours, something like that?
I don't know. No, not really. Every time I would ask, you know, how long it would take or what it would, they would say, you know, maybe a few hours, could be longer. And when they first came in to tell me that they were going to do the Cervidil, they said, we're going to call your doctor and check, but we'll either do just the Cervidil or we'll do the Cervidil and the Folly Balloon at the same time. And I was like, oh, please, let's do it at the same time. Let's do it at the same time. And she came back in and I was just so tremendously disappointed because my doctor had said, just the Cervidil.
Slow play it.
You know, my hubby was like, oh man, what is, you know, we just want the baby to be here.
Right. I know you're like determination, like, let's do it all
I
right now.
I wanted to do it all.
Just do the Cervidil and the
everything.
Foley balloon and
just
Pitocin.
Just stick your head out there and give it him out.
Exactly.
so by 5 a.m., I'd progressed, I think, maybe another centimeter to 2.5 or something. So not a lot, but I was 60 or 70% effaced maybe at that point.
Okay, that's what it really does is helps soften your cervix, but also you doubled your dilation.
Right. So I was pleased with that, and they said, okay, now we're going to do the Folly Balloon.
Okay.
At about 5 minutes after they inserted the Folly Balloon, I realized that I was so grateful that my doctor didn't do them both at the same time at midnight.
All right. That's going to be, hold on a second, a great place to pick up in just a minute.
Okay, go for it.
But before we get there, what was the placing of the Folly Balloon like?
It wasn't too painful. They insert the balloon and blow it up once it's inside, and it's obviously supposed to help you to dilate.
Right, so it's sort of like a pelvic exam.
Yes.
Right? And then a little catheter, the end of it is inflatable.
Yes.
And because your cervix is open a little bit, they can go through to the other side with the head of that catheter, the inflatable part.
Exactly.
And then they usually flush it with water, and it fills up to about 4 centimeters. So the placing of it just felt like a regular pelvic exam?
The placing of it was not painful. It was a little uncomfortable, but yes, it just felt like a regular pelvic exam.
Plus
a tiny bit,
yeah. And then when they inflated it, I guess that's what we'll have to come back to. Ooh, don't go anywhere. We will be right back. I understand the mental demands of motherhood. I see it every day in my practice. That's why I'm excited about Needed's new cognitive support. Unlike other supplements, it's specifically formulated with postpartum and breastfeeding moms in mind, using safe and effective ingredients. This means that moms can get the brain boost they deserve without compromising safety. Plus, it includes clinically studied ingredients, proven to support focus and memory. Hurry and get your cognitive support from Needed before you forget. Visit thisisneeded.com and use your code Berlin to get 20% off your initial order. This episode is sponsored by an innovative product that's made a big difference for parents and babies alike, Dr. Mom Butt Balm. As a parent of 4, I've had my fair share of battles with diaper rash, often resorting to thick, unpleasant pastes. I only recently discovered Dr. Mom Butt Balm, and I was immediately impressed by its pleasant consistency and ease of application. This pediatric-approved skin protectant is free from dyes, preservatives, and zinc oxide, making it perfect for your baby's sensitive skin. It's designed by a doctor who's also a mom, ensuring your little one gets the gentlest care. A small dab is all it takes to soothe and protect, avoiding the mess and hassle of traditional treatments. With ingredients like dimethicone and petrolatum, Dr. Mom Butt Balm not only soothes, but also restores your baby's delicate skin. Available on Amazon.com and Walmart.com, it's the smart choice for every parent wanting to keep diaper rash at bay. Remember, with Dr. Mom Butt Balm, nothing comes between you and your baby, not even diaper rash. Welcome back to the Informed Pregnancy Podcast. We're talking to Claire Holt. And boy, some people love balloons.
I like some balloons. I did not like this one.
Yeah. So what happened once it filled up?
It was so unbelievably painful for me. And I feel like I have a pretty high pain threshold in general. You know, I have broken bones.
You definitely have a high pain threshold.
Okay, good.
Right, you, confirmed.
You can tell. I was contracting basically, I don't really know how you like time it properly, but a minute on, a minute off.
Okay. Oh, wow.
Yes. And the minute off felt like just a milder version of a contraction because the balloon was still dilating
pressing. And
there was pressure. So the contraction was so, so strong for me for that minute. And then the minute I basically contracted constantly for 2 hours is how it felt.
Wow.
And it.
Where did you feel the contractions? Did you feel them in your.
I wasn't necessarily feeling them in my back. I cut a little bit in my back, but I was just, there was so much pressure that I couldn't really determine where it was coming from.
Okay. Did you feel it in your cervix area? Okay.
Yes. And it was really tough for me. And at this point, my husband and my sister were there with me in the hospital room. And of course, they were filming me and thought it was hilarious. And I was like, no, I'm serious, guys. This actually really hurts. and then the nurse came in and I was like, how do people do this without pain relief?
Oh my God. I just don't know why people would even do this without a drug.
I feel like, you know, I'm so early on, I'm not even that dilated, like, this is crazy. And she was like, oh, some people have fentanyl. And I was like, well, I don't want to have fentanyl, so, what should I do? She goes, yeah, just put a heat pack on your back or something. And I was like, but does anyone talk about how much this hurts? And she was like, yeah, they do, it hurts. Some people get the epidural before the balloon. And I was like, well, I don't want to do that, because my plan had been to try and have a natural birth, which I knew was going to be difficult. Unmedicated birth. It doesn't really work with an induction, but I was trying to do it without pain relief.
Pain, yeah, no pain medicine.
No pain medicine. And so at that point, I was like, okay, I'm just going to white knuckle it and I'll be okay. But this is crazy. Like, this is so, so, so painful for me. They told me it could take up to 6 hours to dilate me to 4 centimeters. And after 2 hours of it, I remember the nurse coming in to check how it was going, and I was like, I can't take this much more. This is unbearable. Like, maybe I'm just going to cancel the induction or whatever it is.
Go to Guatemala.
I don't know what I'm doing, but I don't want to do this.
Catch up with your doctor in Guatemala next week.
Exactly.
Baby was totally fine the whole time?
Baby was fine the whole time.
Happy
the whole time. So she came in at, this was at 7 a.m., I guess, and she goes, well, let me check and see where you're at. And she kind of tugged on the balloon, which is what they do to see how far along you are. And she said, okay, I think it can come out. I think you're 4 centimeters, but I got to give it a real tug. And I was like, okay, I'm ready. And, you know, I'm just gripping the edge of the hospital bed and she yanked and I yelled, which I'm not really a yeller, but that warranted a squeal. But when it came out, I felt such relief. The contractions were way less painful after that.
Oh, really? And so not so much pressure on your cervix?
Not so much pressure on my cervix. They just felt bearable. They felt uncomfortable, but I was fine. So about an hour later, 8 a.m., my doctor came in that morning to check me, and she said I was at I was at 4 centimeters and I was effaced, and she could break my water, which I obviously opted for because I wanted anything that
you would have done anything to
done
move
anything.
It along.
Yep.
But I just also want to say, because I've seen a bunch of people have the balloon placed and sit on the balloon for a while, and it's so varyingly different from person to person.
And, you know, I listened to one of your podcasts where they were talking about induction methods, and and when the doctor talked about it, like, I didn't think it was going to be painful.
Right. I mean, you're just wimpy.
I guess so. I guess I'm a
not
real
at all
baby.
The truth. No, but I've seen people have it placed where the actual just placement of it looks miserably, torturously uncomfortable, and then once it's in, they're fine.
Right.
Literally no problem at all. You were sort of the opposite. Placing it was no problem at all, but once they inflated it was. And I also have seen where there's like what seems to be like a 30 to 60 minute hormonal reaction to having all that stretch in your cervix at one point, because there's stretch receptors there that in response to being stretched release hormones. So they have this big spike in hormone. And it makes them like shaky and anxious and, you know, like a big hormonal surge reaction. And then they're fine after like 30 or 35 minutes. So everyone reacts a little differently to these interventions.
Yeah, I remember all I was saying. Actually, my husband was filming me. And he goes, what did Dr. Berlin say? And I said, he told me not to get induced. And he was right.
Oh, I didn't say don't get induced.
No, you didn't. You just said, do you need to be induced? Yeah. And in my head, I thought, yes.
Right.
In reality, I probably didn't. And Maybe I would have had a slightly different experience. It all ended up great. I had my beautiful son. But
oh, you spoiled the ending.
You were right in saying, you know, consider all of the options instead of just going for that straight away.
So, my personal philosophy on it is that it's always a personal choice.
Right.
What are the pros and cons of each choice? When there's a medical consideration to induction, then, you know, some of the benefits of waiting don't really matter that much. And when there isn't, then some of the benefits of waiting really do matter.
Exactly. More. And I think you were telling me this when I had just said my doctor's going away. Right. And there had been no other.
We didn't know about the diagnosis issue that you would have to do afterwards.
Exactly. But, you know, I feel like there was absolute merit to everything that you said. And you know, maybe he would have turned and been the right way coming out and all of those things.
I don't know. Everything I learned from watching South Park.
So. Right, smart.
Well, thank you. All right, back to you.
Okay. So
it's out.
It's out. I feel tremendous relief. I feel like I could do this forever. And then she breaks my water. And it starts to get quite intense at that point.
What does it feel like when she breaks your water?
I didn't feel any pain, really. She just another check, another internal exam. And she nicked it. And I felt an obvious, like,
oh, you felt the gush?
Yep. Which I thought was really cool and exciting because, you know.
Next step.
And she said, okay, you're going to start feeling it a little more now. It should progress quite quickly. After doing this, I'll come back and check you in a few hours. So that must have been, I guess, 8 a.m., 8 or 8:30. And at this point, I'm texting with my doula and I'm still saying, I'm good. I can handle this. You need to rest. Maybe come in an hour or two, you know, but don't worry. I'm good. And I don't think I'm going to have this baby in the next hour. So you got time to get here. And then probably an hour later, it got really intense for me.
In what way?
I felt like it's every muscle in my body I had to contract to be able to make it through the contraction.
You had itself. To contract?
Like I felt like I had to tense every single muscle to be able to withstand the contractions.
But isn't it usually the opposite?
Yeah, I think so. But for me, and I don't know if it's because it's how I've handled pain in my life or pain through exercise or any kind of physical feat that I'm undertaking, I felt like I had to like grit through it. And I wasn't great at just like relaxing. Every time I tried to relax through the contractions, I felt like my body would break and my back
would
break.
Yeah.
I felt like my back would break.
Well, back labor is a little different though.
Right.
Because your baby's pushing so hard on your sacrum with their head
that
it does get pushed beyond its normal point, physiological point, and then it feels like it's breaking. So I bet by you engaging your core a little bit, because you still had core muscles at the very end.
Right.
you specifically.
I did. They didn't tear either.
I bet by engaging your core a little bit, you're probably the effect of what normally we do with counter pressure against your sacrum.
Oh, I bet. I didn't even think of that.
And so you don't feel like you're going to break.
Right. So that's how it felt for me.
And so it's also kind of violent that way when you're fighting yourself so hard.
It
and
really
you
felt,
blow through a lot of energy quickly.
It felt violent. And it felt, it just felt like I remember saying to my sister, I've broken both my feet. I've had compound fractures. This feels like everything breaking at the same time.
Oh, wow.
And I was looking down the barrel of however many more hours of this, and I was just really struggling to understand how I could do it. And my husband was texting my doula and saying, like, she's really struggling. And at this point, I'd had the epidural dangled in front of me a few times.
And they come in?
Yeah.
How you doing with the pain, sweetheart? Can I help you with the pain? Can
do
I get you something?
Yeah. Right. And every time I was like, no, I think I'm okay. I think I'm going to keep trying. I'm okay. And, you know, my husband was massaging me and my sister was massaging me, but I just was really struggling. And my doula had said to my husband because she knew what I was attempting. Don't let her get an epidural. Don't let her say yes until I get there. We're going to try everything, all my measures. When
she has a lot of tools in her toolbox.
A lot of tools when I get there. So she got there about 10:30 a.m. and I was really uncomfortable at this point. I think I was probably 6 centimeters. I think they checked me around this point and I was 6 centimeters dilated.
So you're making progress.
I made a lot of progress.
Things
after.
Are happening.
Yep. And so she said to me, let's get you in the shower. She said, I usually don't do this until someone's like right on the edge of not being able to handle the pain anymore because it's like a natural epidural, the warm
aquadural.
Water. Aquadural. So, and my husband at that, she had actually texted my husband and said, put her in the shower. I'm almost there. And my husband said, she just had a blowout. She's not going to go in the shower. And my doula was like, of course, Lori, she's wonderful. She said, put her hair up, get her in the shower. Anyway, so Lori got there and I finally reluctantly agreed to ruin my blowout. And I jumped in the shower and it felt great for a second. And she had the wand on my back,
yeah,
which was awesome. And I probably was in there for maybe 30 minutes or something. And I was like, okay, I'm getting better. And then something happened and it just stopped helping.
Oh, really?
Yep. And she kept saying to me, Clay, your legs are so tense. They're so tense. You have to relax your legs. You have to. They're like rocks. And I was like, I can't. It's the only way I can get through a contraction is by...
Because you were still posterior, huh?
Yeah. And so I got out of the shower and I remember just leaning on the bed and tears were streaming down my face. I couldn't control it. It was just like... And I was suffering. And I remember in our discussions, you said there's a difference between pain and suffering. And I was really suffering at this point. And so when that anesthesiologist popped his head in and said, is it time yet? I said, yes, please. And so
I'm so polite in that moment.
No, nope. There were some cuss words in there, I'm sure. And so I asked for a walking epidural because I wanted to still be able to move around. It took a little convincing to be allowed to have the walking epidural, but he agreed to give it to me. And then... It was probably one of the hardest things throughout my labor was sitting still through a contraction whilst he put the needle in. I didn't even really feel the needle. It wasn't an issue. It was not moving when I was like in really intense
pain.
Having
your surges, yeah.
Uh-huh. And my doula sat in front of me and she said, just look me in the eye and stare into my eyes and we got this. We can do it together. So when the contraction came, I just stared at her and she stared at me and somehow it got me through the contraction. I didn't move. My spine is still... intact. I didn't have any liquid leaking anywhere or whatever could possibly go wrong. And I felt immediate tremendous relief.
How you doing?
Great.
Oh, wow.
And I was thrilled with my decision at that point. I really was. I could still move around, which was great. And I felt like I had the ability to try and progress my labor that way by rocking and bouncing, but it just took the edge off the pain.
Yeah, that's all you needed, I guess, in your case. Most hospitals don't have a walking epidural.
Right.
It's not that common yet. And even if they do, they don't actually let you walk.
I wasn't walking the halls. I wasn't allowed to do that.
No, but you're on your feet.
I was on my feet.
So you're ambulatory and you have gravity working for you and movement. But just a lot of people listening, you can ask your providers if it's available. But in most places, it's really not still. And really, they just put in some pain relief medicine. It's placed the same exact way, but they put less of the medicine that makes you not feel pressure and things like that. So you can feel the ground against you and you know where your legs are in space. And for a lot of people, it's a great tool. But usually, when you're over the edge of suffering and just have lost it... From what I've seen, it doesn't help enough.
Oh, really? Because I could still feel stuff and I still felt contractions and it wasn't as if I was pain-free, which actually for me made me feel like at least I was like partway to my goal.
But I think you're very unique in terms of your mind control.
Right.
Like you're very practical. Like if I'm not feeling it right now, I'm okay right now.
Uh-huh.
But I think most of us humans, when we get to that point of suffering...
Right.
Just taking off some of the intensity is not enough.
It's not enough.
It's physically enough, but we're too far gone emotionally. And so it doesn't help enough to let you relax. But for you, you're like, oh, that's what I needed. And so you were good.
Exactly. For me, at least, and maybe it was a mind thing, and maybe if I'd done more mind preparation throughout my pregnancy, I would have been able to handle the contractions better. But once that happened for me, I felt great. It did, however, I think, slow down my labor, and we talked about how the bag of fluid that you get beforehand is what slows down the labor, right?
Yeah, I believe that's what happens. They, in order to give you the epidural, they have to give you a full bag of IV fluid, mm-hmm. and that kind of dilutes your hormones, so that productive pattern of surges mm-hmm. that you're having kind of peters out sometimes.
Right.
And it takes a while to come back. And speaking of that, we're going to take a minute, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to the Informed Pregnancy Podcast. We're talking to Claire Holt. So where were we?
So I had the walking epidural, and at this point I'd been racing the girl in the room next to me at the hospital.
You're hilarious. you could see her.
I could see her contractions, and I had asked the nurses, obviously they wouldn't tell me anything about her, but I was like, well, how long has she been here? And they said, 2 days she's been here. I was like, great, I'm going to beat her. I'm going to have this baby before her. I'm going to do it in a day. And so at this point, I was feeling great, but my labor had slowed down a lot. And so I was very frustrated because she was speeding up and I was slowing down and I wanted to win the labor race. But I felt great. So probably for the next, I would say, 6 or 7 hours, I think I progressed maybe like 1 or 2 centimeters over that time.
So then you must be like 8-ish.
Yeah, I guess I was like 7 or 8. Yeah, 8, which is close.
Yeah.
And that's when the walking epidural started wearing off a little. And that's when I really started to feel intense contractions again.
In your back again?
No. So during this period of like 6 hours where I had after the walking epidural, my doula, Lori, had managed to flip the baby.
I told you she has a bag of tools.
She has a bag of tools. So she did all kinds of positions for me. And when I was on my right side, the baby was great. When I was on my left side, he struggled a little bit. His heart rate would drop. So I wasn't there for too long, but she put me in every position known to man. She used a scarf to sort of swing my belly side to side.
Rebozo.
Yes, that. And he turned the right way.
Oh, amazing.
So at that point, I wasn't having the back labor, but I was just feeling like really strong urges and like pressure and rushes and whatever. I don't even really know how to describe it because I feel like I started to leave my body kind of.
Ooh.
It was a very weird primal experience that I don't even know how to describe, and I'm not sure I really remember accurately.
Mm. Is there still video?
There's video. There's some pictures. Yeah, okay. I've got lots of video, but there's pictures of this point, and I remember feeling very nauseous and a lot of pressure and discomfort, and I was shaking a lot. I was like trembling, and at that point I requested the full epidural because I didn't think I'd be able to make it through the pushing stage with how I was feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, I don't think you can have the walking, or at least the nerve pathways are different, I think he explained to me, or something. So it wasn't going to work the same way.
Mm-hmm.
And so I requested the full epidural, and I was really feeling a lot of pressure at this point. I think it was probably 9:30 at night or something. And so I got the full epidural.
When you say pressure, you mean like pressure like you want to push?
Yes.
Pressure, rectal kind of pressure?
Yeah, kind of just a heaviness, a really okay. strong heaviness. And at that point, my contractions weren't really reading on the monitor.
Hmm.
And so it looked to the nurses and to the anaesthetist. Oh, I'm sorry, that's what we say in Australia. Anesthesiologist.
Thank you for translating.
Yes, that it was going to be a while. So I got the full epidural, and the anesthesiologist said, you know, you probably need to rest. Told my husband it might be a few more hours because the contractions were really not showing that I was very, they didn't look strong.
Okay.
But my doula had noticed the shaking and the way I was looking and feeling and acting was really like primal. And she said, I think she's ready to go. And the midwife was kind of like, I don't think so, whatever. Well, we don't need to check her right now. The doctor will be here soon. She's just, you know, finishing up her homework with her kids, which she told me. And I said, great. Anyway, they got to put the catheter in. which they needed to do for an epidural, and they couldn't get it in because the baby's head was in the way. He was right in my birth canal, ready to go.
Oh, no kidding. Oh, yeah, so they went to put in a urinary catheter because you can't walk anymore to go pee.
You can't walk to go to the bathroom.
So they couldn't do it, though.
They couldn't get it in, which meant that I was 10 centimeters and totally ready to go. So my doula texted my doctor and said, we can't get the catheter in, and she rushed down. She was there within 2 minutes.
She gets there really fast.
Yeah, she got there so fast.
She has a cape, I'm sure.
She must. She's amazing. And she got to me and she was like, okay, you're ready to go. Let's do a practice push. And so she taught me how to do it, and I went to do a practice push, and it's just my husband and I in the room at this point, and the doula and the nurses. And she was like, no practicing. He's coming out. Wait. She ran out to get the scrubs. The cart wasn't even in, and they wheeled the cart in really quickly. And she got everything ready, and we were good to go. And then that's when I started to push, and I couldn't feel my contractions at this point because of the epidural.
Right.
So I had to be told when to push, but the feeling of pushing, the sensation was just like, I felt like I was going to explode, like burst. I was just pushing so hard.
You felt it in your face you were going to explode?
My face just felt like I was going to pop. I was sure that I'd burst the
blood vessels
in my eyes and all.
People do.
I didn't. But yes, so I pushed for, I would say maybe 5, 6, 7 minutes, and I got his head out.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
That's so fast.
Very fast. They asked me if I wanted to feel it because he had so much hair, and I touched it and was completely grossed out. And then
really?
Yeah. I was like, nope, won't be touching that again. But then his shoulders were stuck, so he had shoulder dystocia. And he's a pretty big guy.
So his shoulders were stuck, like his head went back in?
No, he just wouldn't come any further.
He couldn't get further.
When I watched back the video, it's interesting because she knew somehow. She was like, stop pushing, the doctor. And she was twisting his head from left to right to left to right. Like, which way are you going to come, little buddy? She was so calm about it. When I look at it, it looked like a pretty scary situation. When I watched the video back, I had no idea that that was happening because she was really calm and everyone around me was really calm. And
In the moment, I didn't know what was happening. Did they give you instructions, like flip over? Or you couldn't
they
really
just
move
said,
that
don't
much.
Move, don't push. And then she had said to the nurses, are you giving me, what's
super
it called?
Suprapubic pressure.
Are you giving me suprapubic? And then she has these really tiny little hands, and she got her hand in there, and she dislodged his shoulder. And then she was like, okay, I got it. You can push. Give me a push. And he came out.
Wow.
So it was a 10-minute.
I could never be an OB with these gigantic hands.
I'm very thankful for her tiny little hands because, I've heard that that can be a tricky situation. But
yeah, we have a whole episode on dystocia, actually. And it can get scary and go on for a while.
Right.
And then it can turn into a big emergency.
Right. That's what I hear. And when I look at it, it looks scary because she's really trying to twist his head back and forth and like move his body to get him out, and he's just not coming. And it took him a little while when he was out to sort of breathe and come to and cry. And she was very relaxed about that too. She was like, you're all right, buddy. You're going to breathe. And I was like, is he breathing? Is he okay? Is everything okay? You know, between the tears and, you know, the crazy overwhelming feeling like I'd never experienced before. And then, you know, what felt like a minute, but it was probably 10 seconds later, there was the beautiful big cry. And he was there on my chest.
I have a personal question, but you don't have to answer it if you don't want to.
Oh, I don't mind.
Did the person in the room next to you give birth before you or after you?
I beat her.
Yes! Yeah. Did you like go in there in your face?
We were kind of like right at the same time, I think. But she'd had a very long labor. I think she'd had 3 days or something.
I think that's all your doctor had to do is to get over the dystocia and be like, oh man, her baby's almost out.
Right out.
And your baby would pop out like a cork.
Totally. Yeah. But it was the most amazing. It's funny because I have some friends who are delivering any minute, and I'm jealous of them that they get to go through.
Oh, really? You want to go on the ride again?
Yeah. I want to go. It feels like someone described it as going to war, and I don't mean it in a negative way, but it feels like you go into battle, and it's just this amazing primal thing, and the reward you get at the end is beyond anything I can possibly describe.
That's so beautiful.
Unbelievable.
How is adapting to motherhood in terms of all the things you have to do, like feeding a baby and stuff like that?
Yeah, like nothing I ever imagined. And I thought I was a giant failure for the first month. For
really?
Sure. Yep. I really struggled with I don't think I had postpartum depression in any way, but I definitely had the blues, and I definitely felt like I was doing everything wrong. I had tremendous anxiety about his health and his safety. He had swallowed a lot of amniotic fluid, so right after my delivery, it was probably 1 in the morning, and I'd been up for almost 48 hours, and because I didn't obviously sleep the night before either, and he made this little sound like, and the nurse said to me, "Hear that sound? That's your baby choking on amniotic fluid. So if you hear that, you have to press the button here and say that my baby's choking, and we'll come in and we'll suction him."
No pressure.
And I looked at her and I said, "I've been awake for 40. I can't. What if I sleep?" She goes, "You won't. You'll hear it." I was like, "I can't do that. Take him. You have to take him to the nursery." So they took him to the nursery, and he came back 2 hours later for me to feed him with a sign saying "Gaggy baby" on his bassinet.
Should be like a onesie line.
I know, my poor little gaggy baby.
Are you a gaggy baby? Yeah.
Yeah, it was. That started it for me, and I really struggled with breastfeeding. I had trouble getting him to latch. I
have an idea.
Yes.
I think you should be the – we've done a lot of before and after stories where we talk to you during pregnancy and then after you've had the baby.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like we should do a trio of – anyway, three episodes with you, and come back and talk about your motherhood experience. I feel like it's going
to
be just a whole.
You're so
animated and real. Like, even when you thought I was going to ask something really personal, you're like, bring it.
Bring it. I know. I like to be an open book. I thought after I had my son that I was going to be so honest about it, even if I was criticized, because I have my whole life related to women who told the truth about what they were experiencing, and it always made me feel better, and it always made me feel normal. And so I've really made it a point to try and talk openly and candidly about my struggles and things that I've found difficult, and I certainly found the transition to motherhood difficult, so I'd love to be able to come back and talk about it.
I'd appreciate that. I know our listeners would too. Before we end this one, I do have two more questions for you. We were predicting, not me, but ultrasound was predicting your baby would be 10 pounds.
Yep.
What was the birth weight?
39 weeks, 8 pounds, 4 ounces.
8 pounds, 4 ounces.
Yep. So he was not a 10-pounder.
Not a 10-pounder. And, you know, it's sort of a dumb question, but in hindsight, you know, which is sort of 2020.
Right.
If you can go back to the beginning and do it again, would you do anything differently?
It's hard to say, because I'm very, very thankful that Dr. Kaka delivered my baby, and I'm very thankful that when he came out and he had the tests, he was fine and healthy.
Well, that was another question. So you did all the tests and everything's clear.
He's good. And that was a tremendous relief for me. Would I, if there weren't those issues, electively be induced at 39 weeks? Probably not.
Mm-hmm.
I think I would have waited to give him the chance to come on his own. But I'm thankful that I did. I'm thankful that I had a safe delivery. I'm thankful that he was healthy. He came out at 8 pounds. You know, some of the issues we have after was because maybe he came a little early. He wasn't quite ready. I don't know. It's very hard to say. But no, I wouldn't have changed anything, because I'm glad that he came safely and he's healthy. Would I be induced if I had just the choice and there was no reason to be? Probably not.
Mm-hmm. Do you think you'll have more kids?
Yes.
Ooh.
It's very funny. Right when he came out, I wanted 4. After the first month, I wanted to give him back. And then, and now I want 10. I just love it so much.
Oh, I hope you have 10.
I don't know if my body or my husband hope I have 10. But
I can't wait to the episode where we say, "Welcome to the 30th episode with Claire Holt." She's about to give birth to her 10th baby. Oh, I don't think so. You're so entertaining. Well, thanks again for being here and sharing your story. Beautiful story.
Thank you.
And congratulations. At home, thanks for listening. If you would like more of this type of media, visit our website, informedpregnancy.com.
Doctor, doctor, give me the news. I got a whole lot of questions for you. Kids gonna test my will. I got a lot to learn, and my baby's due.
This episode is sponsored by an innovative product that's made a big difference for parents and babies alike, Dr. Mom Butt Balm. As a parent of four, I've had my fair share of battles with diaper rash, often resorting to thick, unpleasant pastes. I only recently discovered Dr. Mom Butt Balm, and I was immediately impressed by its pleasant consistency and ease of application. This pediatric-approved skin protectant is free from dyes, preservatives, and zinc oxide, making it perfect for your baby's sensitive skin. It's designed by a doctor who's also a mom, ensuring your little one gets the gentlest care. A small dab is all it takes to soothe and protect, avoiding the mess and hassle of traditional treatments. With ingredients like dimethicone and petrolatum, Dr. Mom Butt Balm not only soothes, but also restores your baby's delicate skin. Available on Amazon.com and Walmart.com, it's the smart choice for every parent wanting to keep diaper rash at bay. Remember, with Dr. Mom Butt Balm, nothing comes between you and your baby, not even diaper rash.